As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, I'm Allison Raskin. I'm a writer, mental health advocate, and co-host of the podcast Just Between Us.
What a coincidence. I'm Gabe S. Dunn. I'm a writer, bisexual icon, wink, and I'm also the co-host of this show.
Just Between Us is a variety show where we interview fascinating people, play a ridiculous game called Hypotheticals, and talk about things that affect everyone or maybe sometimes just me.
We also do a show called Too Long, Did Read It, which is a show where we scour the depths of Reddit to find the weirdest, kookiest, most upsetting posts, and then give our opinions.
So if you're looking for a new show to check out that goes from silly to serious in the same episode, often multiple times,
back and forth from each of us,
you can check out the Just Between Us feed, where we have over 200 episodes waiting just for you.
200 episodes?
I know, we've been doing this a long time.
And they were very funny.
Okay.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Not all that glitters is gold. Half the story has never been told.
Because righteousness governs the world.
Come take a musical journey from the suburbs of Long Island to the ghettos of Kingston. A heartbreaking overdose. A disturbing discovery. The last chance to redeem a stolen legacy.
Broadcasting live and direct from the rolling red hills on the outskirts of Kingston, Jamaica. From a magical place at the intersection of words, sound, and power. The red light is on. Your dial is set. The frequency in tune to the Rootsland podcast. Stories that are music to your ears.
In the reggae anthem Get Up Stand Up, the Wailers sing, "Not all that glitters is gold. Half the story has never been told. My friend Brian always dreamed he could make the world a better place. Maybe by me telling his story, he still can."
Consequence Podcast Network presents Rootsland, Season 1, Reggae Junkie Joe.
Whole barrage of righteous people out there.
Because sometimes the story is the best song.
I'm Leo Phillips, host of This Must Be The Gig. We're a weekly podcast that documents everything about the world of live music. Speaking with choreographers, costume and set designers, the people who run beloved venues and festivals, and, of course, speaking with musicians about that one gig that changed their lives. Get your peek behind the curtain at consequenceofsound.net, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you so much for checking out the series as always. Hopefully you like what you hear enough to hit that subscribe button. Keep up with all the interviews that we put out every single week. Three brand new ones, one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep up with all of your favorite artists, discover some new ones, and know what's happening in the music world. Of course, you can find us at all the major spots like iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, YouTube, or anywhere you like to get your podcast from. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, the legendary Jane Birkin. We're going to be talking about her new record, which has a French title. I'm going to crutch on the English version of it. Oh, Sorry You Were Sleeping. It's a new album of original songs that stem from her theatrical play of the same name, as well as the passing of her daughter, Kate Berry. Jane's going to talk about what attracted her to writing about ghosts. There's a lot of ghosts that kind of haunt and come in and out all throughout the record. And the cinematic nature of the music, as well as continuing to find new ways to bring Serge Gainsbourg's poetry to the people, something she's very, very famous of and something she's been doing in a new, fun way during lockdown. We're also going to be discussing the work her daughters, Charlotte Gainsbourg and Lou Doylen, have done and whether or not they discuss their art with each other. And then we also get a tip on what she's doing post-lockdown, planning at least a residency after this is all over with to do the live versions of these songs. That's all on the way. Check it out. It's Kyle Meredith with Jane Birkin.
Hello, hello, hello.
First, I got to say how amazing it is to meet you. Thank you so much for doing this. Congratulations on just this beautiful new record. I know I'm going to have to use the English translation. I don't want to murder the original title here of Oh, Sorry You Were Sleeping. It's beautiful. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Like the title, especially, like this starts with a theatrical play that you did years ago, right?
Yeah, I wrote it first of all as a film, and it came out with Jacques Perrin and Christine Boisson. And then I did it again as a play a couple of years after. And the film I directed myself and I'd written it, it was just the same as the play was. And then Etienne Dao came once, twice, maybe three times. And he said that he thought the text would be a good record, a sort of one person musical. And so I thought that was a funny idea, and why not? And I was secretly flattered that he should think that the text was worth anything. And then he used to pop me the question every so often, and he wasn't free or I wasn't free because I was doing Arabesque or I was doing Serge with the Philharmonique, or I don't know, there were things that happened, or then my daughter died and I didn't do anything for quite a long time. And so it was never the right moment. And then after having done the Philharmonic for nearly four years, I got my agent to find out from Etienne if he was still interested. This was 20 years later. And he said he was. So I whizzed around to his house with two texts that I'd written about my daughter, one which was called Cigarette and one about the cemetery. And for me, it wasn't really possible to do a subject that was about all sorts of things, jealousy and what all the rest of the record is about, but without talking about her, because she died 7 years ago and it was the most dramatic thing that had ever happened, of course, to me. So we started with those two, and he'd done all the music in advance, so he played me a music that was a bit like Kurt Weill, and he put the words of Cigarette on that, and it sounded quite shocking, but at the same time I thought, well, perhaps that's exactly what it should be and how it should come out. You can hardly put a sentimental music onto those words. And when we'd done those two, we went back to the children in the cemetery when they were playing Jeux Interdits, and we got going on Au Pardon Tu Dormais, and he'd cut out everything that he thought had been vaguely interesting, everything in the play. And then he got unhappy when there were a few things we couldn't fit into songs, and he made one up, which was Je voulais être une telle perfection pour toi. That was just using bits that had nothing to do with each other and making a song with them. So he's been quite extraordinary, because I never would have done it or even found it that it would interest anyone to do it had it not been for Etienne.
It's also interesting because, you know, any one of these things could have made for a full concept album, and for you to be taking, you know, from so many different sources to make this one complete statement and have it work together so well. You know, as I listen through it, of course, you mentioned your daughter, you mentioned the cemetery, and there is the track called Ghosts. Mm-hmm. And I do find that they're sort of peppered all throughout the record. I mean, not everywhere, of course, but you do find little ghosts. And I would start to wonder, you know, as I was first listening to it, are these ghosts metaphorical in the sense that they're memories or something like that? Or are we really thinking of more of a gothic substance, you know, a real true?
Well, maybe more of a gothic substance. I always thought that they would be made into cartoons like Gustave Doré illustrations and have you whizzing out the window on bat's wings of a bit like, what was it, something on a cold mountain that was a bit out of Fantasia when you saw all those fumes coming out. And then for you to be on their wings. So a sort of Peter Pan going back home. In fact, the last song, which is Catch Me If You Can, is also going home. It's also the thing of going back to where you're safe. Childhood, probably.
It's also picturesque, cinematic in a way. You know, when I listen to this, I had to kind of check myself a little bit because a lot of times when I hear French music, I do think of cinema. Like, to me, it all sounds so cinematic. Not all of it, you know, there's so many different styles, but so much of it does. What you do, I started wondering, like, is that something I'm imposing on it? Or is that something that naturally comes with French music where it just sounds like every single song is its own movie?
This particular record seemed to me very, very like a movie. I mean, when there was one which was Marie Haute, the orchestrations of the whole thing were so extraordinary that I felt as if, you know, you were on the boat, Christina, you know, the orchestrations were so divine that Jean-Louis Perrault did. So they were like little movies, yes.
Did you work on it, you know, so they're writing the music and everything and you've written the words. How much do you work on the melody yourself? Because the melodies are amazing all throughout this record.
None at all. And what's more, I was ill for a lot of the time. So he recorded a lot of the things and it was a surprise when I came back. The little boys singing, I'd always wanted, of course, but the violins, the beautiful orchestrations, the bagpipes. I rather wanted the bagpipes. So there were a few ideas. Oh, I don't even know that I had the ideas. I don't think so. I think they were all his. And when the French said, but doesn't it sound a bit like Serge Gainsbourg? He said that he purposely tried not for it to sound like Serge Gainsbourg because it's already quite daunting for them to follow nearly sort of 40 years or 50 years of me singing Serge's songs. So of course they didn't try and do an imitation of Serge in any way. And Etienne said, if anything, that they'd been influenced by John Barry's music, which was movie music. So that's how I realized what had touched them, by the instruments even. And then, of course, because it's me singing, then people think of Serge because we're sort of linked together so strongly.
And I know that's something that you've... of course, you continue. The last tour was kind of built around a surge of songs. But what was I reading that during this lockdown pandemic that you would be calling random strangers and reading Serge poetry to them?
Yes. Good fun.
Yeah. What was that experience?
Well, it's a theater in the Théâtre de la Colline. And I know the man, Wajdi Mouyawad, who's a very good director. And he had the idea that he'd ask actors, if they would like to ring these phone numbers. And they'd sort of, I suppose, read poems to people, which of course we didn't know. And I couldn't think of any poems where I was really very at ease. I mean, yes, a few American poets maybe, but I was ill at ease with French poetry. I didn't feel I was going to do it very well. So I did Serge's lyrics. So when I used to ring up and do Quoi de notre amour feu resterait que descendre, people were rather pleased. It takes 10 minutes out of a really boring day for them and for me.
But what a special connection right there. I mean, and
You know, and for you, I mean, carrying on, you know, the legacy of his words, obviously, you know, your own legacy, you know, with your art and your work and now your own words. I mean, I'll go back and compliment you on the poetry on this record. I mean, obviously some of it I had to look up and translate, but you do have two English songs on here.
Yes.
And that's, is that a first? Because that's not something you've regularly done. Why those in English?
Because the music made me think of ghosts. And then, and because they were my ghosts, for the beginning, grandmothers, grandfathers, they all were English. So daughters, nephews, they were English. And then cats and dogs, of course, and husbands and friends have been a bit of a mixture, but it was sort of normal that it would be English. And perhaps there's a tendency that is English, or perhaps it's my family, perhaps it's my grandfather who was a clergyman, I don't know, that he used to put different heads on different animals, stuffed animals, and underneath he used to write, "Such are the marvels of the good Lord." So he was a very funny man called Poppy Russell. He was a eccentric English clergyman. So perhaps there's a tendency of finding all that rather enchanting in a way that seemed normal for ghosts. I wouldn't have written it in French. And Catch Me If You Can was really, Kate had written on a little piece of paper that she'd stuck onto her diary as happy like Ulysses between his parents. And I thought, what's that? What does she mean? What did she mean? I mean, when people die, you look for clues. And so I suddenly thought, perhaps that's where everybody wants to go back, to be as happy as Ulysses, to be safe again, really. So as the music there again went, dun, 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 it was a sort of falling music. He'd asked me to write an epitaph, Etienne, and sent me off to Brest, but I was unable to write an epitaph. But there was a sort of mixture between Kate and me. And then the last time I'd seen her by the piano after a show I'd done, there'd been a party, so there were lots of people around her. And I always remember thinking, what were last people's images of her? Did they have the same impression as I did? Because then, supposing we've all stayed in the same positions, like grandma's footsteps, like that, and she's just walked through and up the stairs and off the roof. So it was like a movie again. Mm-hmm. It was a very easy to see sort of thing, and then it took over itself as. I've heard it happens to people with songs, and it's true with Catch Me If You Can. I was writing it and suddenly it caught up with me. Directly I looked up about Ulysses, and something magical happens and you're taken away. And so ghosts and that one, those are the only ones in English, no? And then, Oh Pardon Tu Dormais was really the dialogue from the movie. I mean, it gets a bit more violent in the film or in the play because as he doesn't answer any of the questions that she's hoping for answers, which is sort of fatal because no one wants to reply what you want to hear at 3-4 in the morning. So in the end, in the play, she realizes that she provokes him saying that it would be better if he left, that it would be better if he went to this other room. So she says, what, you have a room? So it does exist, a room and a key and a staircase. And then she's so hysterical that she's so frightening to look at. And she asks him whether he'll always see her that way. What can she do? What death will she have to get rid of that awful image he has of her? And all these little bits, Etienne put together, par quelle mort, he put that in Marie Haute. Nothing was wasted.
No, it absolutely wasn't, at least to my ears. and again, I will. I'll keep paying you compliments as often as I can on this because it's such a lovely album. But it's also been written about. It is a personal record. You bring up, you know, your daughter Kate and her passing. And to make something like that musical, I mean, do you have to separate yourself in any way to get to that spot?
It doesn't really matter. I mean, it doesn't do much. It's not as painful as it seems. When I wrote it, it was because I'd come back from, I think we were in Lyon, and I'd gone into a pharmacy and then there was a little kit for manicuring your toenails, and a sweet little set. And that set me off, because I remembered her feet and how delicate it was and how she used to take care of those beautiful white feet. And I got back to the hotel in a terrible state, and Philippe Le Richomme was there, my artistic director for years and years, and he just said, write it all down. So I went up to my bedroom. I didn't have any paper. I wrote it on the back of my diary, and that was it. Ma fille s'est foutue en l'air. I wrote it down like that. So when I went round to Etienne's, I just showed him that. And it was sort of mixed up between that and the cemetery. We're all intertwined. And he helped me untwine it. And then he didn't quite know how to, he suggested this music for cigarettes. And then I didn't answer him for about 3 days. And they got worried that I'd been hurt I don't know, that I hadn't liked it and not at all. I thought that it was just the right way of doing it. I was probably shocked, and it's not something that I listen back to, not that particular song, only that song. I jump over it, not because it's painful, just because it makes me feel ill at ease.
You have two other daughters. We're big fans of Charlotte's, her music here. I'm in Louisville, radio station WFBK. We play a lot of Charlotte too. Do you all talk about your albums when you're making records?
No, we're all so secret. I know Charlotte's writing an album now, and she wants to play something to me before she goes off to Los Angeles to record it. So I'll have that good fortune. But they said nothing about this record, neither of them.
I guess that's interesting to me because, again, it is such a personal testament from you that, you know, I'd wondered if it would be in a family conversation in any way.
In no way, no one even approached the subject of Christmas to such a degree that I thought, oh my God. But Lou said that it was punk, which was when I played it to her. And that was months ago, because I played it to them first, of course, even before the orchestrations were put on. And Charlotte was very moved about with the graveyard one. And they've never talked about it again. So I haven't brought it up either. I just saw it climbing up the charts and was sort of, it was just a secret then. but I mean, I go off to see, I saw a couple of Charlotte's movies. Funnily enough, one on the other night, there was nothing on television very much. So I went on to Netflix, and no, not even, onto another channel that I'd never seen before. Perhaps it was Canal Plus. Anyhow, I suddenly saw her with that extraordinarily beautiful face when she was in The Golden Door, which was about Italian immigrants arriving in America. And so I wrote off a texto to her because she was so stunning, and with red hair. And then I remember being on the set with her when she was doing it in South America, in Buenos Aires. And then I put on a Martin Scorsese film yesterday that was about an incredible woman called Fran
Lebowitz.
Yeah. And what do I see but a bit of Charlotte again, and Serge burning a bit of the 100 flat note. And so I wrote off to Charlotte and to Lou in my excitement, and they'd both seen it. So I said, oh, thanks. It was such a funny film to see, what's more, and such an extraordinary character that I knew they'd like it very much. And Lou, being a bookworm, really, like her, I knew how much she spends her life in Shakespeare and Company in Paris. And so she's very, very literary. And she writes her own stuff too. So perhaps we don't get too involved in talking about that. We talk about our private lives and the misery of this and that, and jokes and laughs and children. But we don't talk about what we do.
We all make such amazing arts. I mean, you know, to be a fan, you know, to be able to get some of this stuff. I know I'm really lucky. We're all really lucky about what you all do. And for this record as well, you know, I'll keep coming back to that. Do you plan on touring it when that's possible? Is that in the cards?
The idea is that we're going to set up some sort of residence, it's called, which is rather nice, to rehearse for a few weeks in Jennifer Mott in April, and then be on tour in May. I hope that'll be possible. I'm not feeling very good right now. perhaps I'll be better. In hospital by then, I don't know. But Maybe it'll be all right by then. I mean, we've had such luck in it coming out before Christmas. They were going to put it off until February. And I thought, how do we keep everybody interested? I mean, I'd already done interviews and covers of things. So what do we do? People be fed up with the thing. And then, no, a bit of luck just before Christmas, we were able to come out. So maybe we'll be lucky again.
I certainly hope so. I would love to hear how these songs kind of come to life in those live ways too. I'll be looking forward to kind of checking that out. And Jane, it's such a beautiful record. It's such an amazing piece that you've put out here. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it.
No, today. Thank you. Thank you very much. It's boosted my day. Thank you.
Great. Take care. We'll see you around.
You too. Bye.
My thanks to Jane Birkin for the interview here. Thanks to you as well for checking out the series. Please do hit that subscribe button before you get out here. iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, YouTube, where the video versions of many of these interviews exist. And then after that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, an hour full of song premieres and music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews. Again, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all three of them, at Kyle Meredith. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at HereYouAreAZ.com.